3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Welcome to the first ever episode of Carmen Line Cafe. I'm your co-host, Derek Richardson, and joining me is your other co-host, Reuben Worthington.
Thanks for having me, Derek.
Each Tuesday, we plan on taking a topic about human spaceflight and go into detail about it in order to get a better picture of its place in the story of human spaceflight. But first, a little bit about us. I'm Derek. I've been interested in space exploration since 1998, when I first saw John Glenn returned to space via Space Shuttle Discovery. After I graduated from high school, I ultimately earned a mass media degree at Washburn University. It was during that time I started Orbital Velocity, which is a website dedicated to telling informative, accurate, and digestible content. It was also during that time I managed content at Space Flight Insider, which I did that until recently when I decided to commit to expanding Orbital Velocity by providing a newsletter, create more videos on YouTube, and now this podcast.
As for me, you know, I really got into space, not really more into high school. You know, we did a lot of rocket launches and a lot of aerospace. You know, we did an aerospace engineering program where I came from and went to high school with Derek, so I've known him a long time. And, you know, even back in 2012, we went on a trip out to L.A., saw Space Shuttle Endeavor pulled across the 405, and that's the first time I really got to see a space shuttle, you know, up close and in person. And, you know, it's those sort of experiences that really make space interesting. It's more a part of your life. You can really experience it in person as opposed to just a classroom or, you know, online. What space really means to me more even is from an economic standpoint. So while the science and discovery component, you know, always catches my curiosity, it's that economic potential from space tourism, of course, potential alternative energy resources, you know, just seeing the progress of SpaceX and Blue Origin and that whole privatization of space and the potential in that is just really exciting to me.
So one of the things I want to talk about for this first inaugural episode is how 2019 is going to be a tipping point year, that when we look back, it's going to be realized the year that things really started changing. I feel like in the story of spaceflight, it seems like every year we seem to say that. And I remember people in 2010 talking about it with the shuttle program ending. They're like, okay, well, shuttle program is ending. We're going to go back to the moon with the Constellation program. There's a throwback right there. It's hard to believe that was canceled just 10 years ago. But the difference with this year, 2019 and 2020 and in the 2020s, is so much has been accomplished over the last 10 years with regard to human spaceflight that I think the gears have just turned enough that they're just going to keep turning, and it's going to take something crazy to stop it. Sure, the vice president set the goal of landing humans on the moon by 2024, and whether NASA can actually achieve that in today's budgetary and political environment is still up in the air, but I do believe it's going to happen in the 2020s. So much has been accomplished. I mean, we've got the SLS, the Space Launch System, is almost done. They're getting ready to test it. Also, 2019, we saw the 50th anniversary of humans' first landing on the moon, and the excitement that garnered for a historic event from 50 years ago, that's just inspiring, and I think there's enough people interested in this that things are going to happen. And that's just for deep space exploration, of course. And we've got the Commercial Crew program that, again, for the last 8 to 10 years, that's just, it's been making slow and steady progress. But 2019 was another watershed year for that, in which we actually saw both commercial crew companies, Boeing and SpaceX, make their first test flights. They were uncrewed test flights, but they were flights nonetheless, actual hardware getting off the ground and actually into space. Now, granted, Boeing's orbital flight test, which happened in mid-December, kind of had a timing issue, and it actually didn't make it to the space station. But they still accomplished most of what they were going for. SpaceX, back in March, they launched their Crew Dragon, the demonstration mission 1, made it to the space station, was there for about a week, and landed. But even they had their own problems after the mission ended, when they were testing that same exact capsule on the test stand. That capsule was originally supposed to be used for their in-flight abort test. And when they did a static fire on a pedestal and lit the abort engines, the whole thing exploded.
Mm.
Had that happened with a crew on board, would not have been good.
Right, that would have been terrible.
Now, thankfully, that's why you test, obviously.
Yeah.
But that set SpaceX back quite a bit. They could have potentially launched their first crew into space this year, but they haven't done that because they haven't been able to do the in-flight abort test yet. But that's just the Commercial Crew program. The International Space Station itself has seen a lot of science and research done. In particular, they've actually gotten a lot of spacewalks done as well. This year saw more spacewalks at the International Space Station than any year since the end of the space shuttle program.
So you said there was a lot of spacewalks. Can you give me a number, Derek?
Oh, yeah. The last year of the space shuttle program, there was actually, if you include the Russian spacewalks from the Russian side of the space station, there were 10 spacewalks. Now, the year after that, there were 5. Now, we've had ups and downs since then, but the peak of ISS assembly was actually, for spacewalks anyway, was in 2007, and there were 23 spacewalks that year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This year, in 2019, there were 11 spacewalks, and most of those happened since October.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. And also, a very important historic thing to mention is the first all-female spacewalk happened in
October. Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exciting.
No, it was Christina Cook and Jessica Meir, two NASA astronauts, and that was the first. Now, there have been women on spacewalks before. It's important to mention that, but this is the first time two women at the same time are on spacewalks. Now, the way spacewalks work is it's like a buddy system. There's always two people on a spacewalk. There's no more. There's only one time in history there have been three people outside at one time.
Oh, okay.
And that was actually during I believe it was Endeavour's maiden flight in 1982. They had some trouble capturing a satellite. In a last-ditch effort, they actually had a third person go out there to try to help manually capture this satellite.
Oh, makes sense. Yeah.
So they just needed an extra set of hands. But it's never been done since. And really, for the most part, there's no reason for more people to go out there. It's just a very dangerous thing to do. But these spacewalks, the reason why there were so many this year is because we had two sets of battery replacement spacewalks. The space station is being set up to, there's hardware is being replaced on the space station to help it last through the end of the 2020s. Currently, funding is guaranteed via the U.S. government through 2024. Boeing is the prime contractor for most of the U.S. parts of the space station. They believe those components can last to 2028, maybe even 2030. And many international partners want to keep the International Space Station going through the end of the decade as well. So it's very likely the United States will continue funding it beyond 2024.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. After that funding were to end, it's just sort of up to Congress.
Yeah, it's hard to say sometimes. Really, Congress dictates where the money goes with a lot of these big projects. And if Congress says you need to end the space station, NASA's got to end the space station. But I can't really see that happening, mostly because there'd be a lot of backlash for that. As long as the International Space Station is safe and productive, I don't see it ending anytime soon.
Oh, okay. So another thing that was very exciting for me in 2019, and you know me, Derek, with the privatization of space or anything moving in that direction, was the policy that was introduced for commercial use for the space station.
One of the things that NASA announced this year was a new initiative to actually encourage more private entities to utilize the International Space Station. The goal is to ultimately to commercialize low Earth orbit, at least the human side of things, within the next several years, so they can essentially phase out the International Space Station. NASA's wanting to actually open up a number of parts of the International Space Station in order to more private activity in order to accelerate the commercialization of low Earth orbit, to eventually phase out the International Space Station before the end of the decade.
Now, why are they wanting to phase out the space station?
Because it costs so much.
Who says it costs too much?
$3.5 billion.
Oh, so taxpayers.
Possibly, yeah. Now, the thing about that is the space station is doing a lot as far as science and research is concerned, and it is a unique environment that's really irreplaceable right now. But the idea would be to actually have private entities take features of the space station and be able to duplicate those on their own commercial platforms. So you can imagine the capabilities of the space station split up into multiple free-flying platforms that humans can, whether it's a research team, a human research team, or a NASA astronaut team, or whatever, they can buy services via commercial crew spacecraft to go to these commercial platforms. Now, I don't think that once the International Space Station is gone, I have a feeling that we're not going to see an all-in-one capable platform like the ISS is. It's kind of like the end of the space shuttle. It's going to be a while before we see such a vehicle that does everything the space shuttle did. Those are all some of the initiatives and things that happened in 2019 that are kind of pushing us into 2020 and beyond, that are going to see the commercialization and more utilization of the International Space Station and ultimately commercializing low Earth orbit, at least human activity in low Earth orbit.
Which is what I find exciting.
And freeing up that money to do other things, for NASA to do other things in a deep space and put more money to, say, the Artemis program. It was also a busy year for the International Space Station. 5 commercial cargo vehicles from SpaceX and Northrop Grumman went to the space station. One of those cargo vehicles brought a second international docking adapter, which means the space station can now host 2 commercial cruise vehicles at the same time. It's an exciting time because in November of 2019, we actually started the 20th consecutive year of humans in space. So for 20 years, anybody younger than 20, anybody in high school and younger has never known a time where there have not been astronauts in space. That's crazy. You know, since 2000, since November 2nd, 2000, there's always been at least one American and one Russian in space, and often more than that, up to 6 people regularly on the space station. And there have been brief periods where there have been 13 on the space station during shuttle missions. Hopefully we can continue that well into the 2020s.
I hope so too.
So that's a little bit about what happened at the International Space Station in 2019 and a little bit looking forward to 2020 and beyond. For now, we'll go to break. And after the break, we'll talk about the Artemis program, in particular NASA's deep space ambitions over the last decade and through the next decade.
All right, welcome back from our break. So going forward, 2019 was a big year for NASA's deep space goals. The vice president challenged NASA, you know, to go back to the moon by 2024. But what makes this time different than the other times that NASA's attempted to send people back?
That's a good question. What makes this different? And really, I think what makes this different is the amount of progress that has already been done before the vice president made his challenge. I mean, none of the stuff that we have now are anywhere near new. If we really want to go back, it'd be all the way to 2004, when George W. Bush made a goal for NASA to return humans to the moon by 2020. We're obviously in 2020 now, and that's not happening. But George W. Bush's challenge in 2004 ultimately led to what was called the Constellation Program. That involved, you know, a giant rocket called the Ares V, a smaller crew rocket called the Ares I, a multi-purpose crew vehicle that would ultimately become the Orion spacecraft, and potentially a lunar lander called Altair. It was essentially going to be what the NASA administrator at the time, Mike Griffin, said, Apollo on steroids. Basically a giant rocket, send it all to the moon, and come back, just like we did during Apollo. The problem with a lot of that was funding, as it always is.
What's the estimated cost of the program?
I don't remember what it was, but it was a lot, and NASA and the Congress at the time was not willing to fund all that.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Some of the program was funded. What would ultimately become the Orion spacecraft was funded, or at least started to be funded. The Ares V was started to be funded, but mostly under the guise of the Ares I rocket, which is what was like a single stick, small crew vehicle. The original goal for Orion was to, this is before commercial crew, by the way. And so the goal was to take Orion and actually launch it on this single stick Ares I rocket, and it'd be able to go to the International Space Station or rendezvous with cargo that was launched by the Ares V rocket that would have launched a Earth departure stage and a lunar lander. But like I said, Ares I started development with a 5-segment solid rocket booster, and then the Orion spacecraft started early development as well. But things got behind quickly because it was never appropriately funded. The lunar lander was never funded at all. It was just a paper concept. Now, 2010 comes around. By that time, there's a new president. I think it was in 2009, there was a commission that was formed, the Augustine Commission, I believe. And ultimately, they found that the Constellation program would not be sustainable under the current plan, under the current trajectory of budgets, and would require a lot more funding if it was going to be back on schedule. And so ultimately, the Obama administration canceled Constellation, effectually now called Constellation. That threw the whole deep space program into chaos. The shuttle program was getting ready to end, and now we have no deep space plan. So we're about to have no access to space and no plans for space, for as far as human spaceflight is concerned.
Oh, yikes. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, granted, there was still the International Space Station. It would be not long after that when the Obama administration would actually push for commercial crew. The Obama administration, their plans for human spaceflight was to fund commercial crew, get that going, and then fund research projects for advanced research projects for deep space. That's really all they wanted to do. Not long after the announcement of the cancellation of Constellation, Obama would actually go to Kennedy Space Center to actually announce his vision. His goal was actually to go to an asteroid, send a crew to an asteroid. And then eventually Mars. Now, it's important to note, almost every human deep space human spaceflight program, it's always something and then on to Mars someday.
Yeah,
that's always the long term.
Because Mars is the ultimate destination.
Mars is always the ultimate destination, exactly.
And that's exciting.
Of course. It's something that's never been done. It's always something that humanity has wanted to do for the longest time. The United States Congress at the time basically said, you know what, we don't like the fact that you canceled this giant Ares V rocket. That was money for a lot of certain senators' districts, you know, in particular in Louisiana and Mississippi and Utah and various other states that NASA has major facilities at. And so the compromise, sort of a compromise, was that, yeah, you can cancel Constellation, but we still want you to build a giant shuttle-derived launch vehicle. Ultimately, that turned into the SLS. Orion was brought back to life under the guise of a deep space vehicle as well. So basically, Ares V turned into the SLS. Orion continued to be Orion, but by that time, Orion was being designed for the this new asteroid plan. So the goal was to use these two pieces of hardware, to the Space Launch System and Orion, to actually go to an asteroid. That, in of itself, required the use of the development of a solar electric propulsion vehicle. After searching and searching and searching for an asteroid that, you know, you could potentially send humans to, it was realized that NASA couldn't find one close. So they figured, well, let's go and lasso us an asteroid, or at least a boulder of an asteroid. So that started the idea of advanced solar electric propulsion. So that we can go, yeah, exactly. And so we can actually go and take this boulder with solar electric propulsion, bring it back to the vicinity of the moon. So the idea was to take Orion, not go into low lunar orbit, but actually just go into a general halo orbit around the moon to rendezvous with this asteroid that they would bring back.
Okay.
Again, the same problems plagued the asteroid redirect mission as plagued Constellation. Slowly but surely, things got behind schedule and over budget. The Space Launch System was originally supposed to launch in 2017, and by my check, that's 3 years late at least. Then comes the Trump administration. He announced Space Policy Directive 1, which basically is, hey, we're going back to the moon. We're going to use international and commercial partners to do it. That's it in a nutshell. And eventually onto Mars. Don't forget that. That's the important part to mention. Eventually onto Mars. It's always that. Basically, all that's changed is the destination. But the hardware at this point is already being developed for an asteroid redirect mission. And so now you have to take what you already have and figure out how you're going to get this Orion spacecraft and its crew to be able to send people to the moon. And so the ultimate way they did that was they took the solar electric propulsion element of the asteroid redirect and turned it into a small space station in orbit around the moon. So Orion goes to the space station, or the lunar orbiting space station, now called just the Lunar Gateway, and then a lander would get go from there and go to the moon and back, and then they come back home.
So they literally repurposed it.
They literally just repurposed it. Okay. Exactly.
Well, that's great. That's very resourceful.
Now we're at the beginning of 2019. NASA ultimately settles on the date of 2028 for the first humans to return to the moon. 2028. Using this new architecture they've come up with over the last couple of years of Space Policy Directive 1, they started the process of what they need to do in order to reach their goal of 2028. And that includes commercial lunar landers for cargo and science under the CLPS program. That includes logistics services for the mini space station they want to build up there, gaining international partners. And that all started in the first quarter of the year. And then the Vice President, Mike Pence, comes along and says,
"That's just not good enough. We're better than that. It took us 8 years to get to the moon the first time 50 years ago, and it shouldn't take us 11 years to get back. It is the stated policy of this administration and the United States of America to return American astronauts to the moon within the next 5 years.
That kind of threw the whole agency in a tizzy. Like, how are we actually going to do it 4 years sooner than we originally planned and in a reasonable budget? And so all we really have at this point is the Space Launch System on contract and the Orion spacecraft on contract, and some CLPS, the Commercial Lunar Payload Services missions on contract. What still needed to be done at that point was the Lunar Gateway, which is a big component of this new architecture. The Lunar Lander, there's not been a Lunar Lander funded at NASA, for humans anyway, since the Apollo program. If you're going to land on the moon, you need that. That hasn't been contracted yet, and contracts typically take years to get to sort out, and eventually, you know, before you settle on a contract with one or two companies.
I wondered, why is that? Just bidding process?
Bidding processes, lawsuits, the usual. Basically, there's a whole tango. They the NASA and the contractors usually go through. In addition to that, if you're going to land on the moon, you also want to get out and go somewhere. We also need spacesuits. That wasn't contracted to anybody yet. NASA's been designing spacesuits, concepts for spacesuits for years, but there was no announcement for this is the spacesuit.
It seems like there's these little nuances getting in the way.
Some of them were bigger than just nuances, too. Oh, yeah. There's a lot that needed to be done, and it just seemed like there was a huge mountain of things that needed to be accomplished within the first year of this new, what they are now calling the Artemis program. Between May 2019 and I would say just early fall 2019, NASA did that. They got these contracts, or at least almost got almost all these contracts. The power and propulsion element, essentially the service module of the Lunar Gateway, was contracted to Maxar Technologies. The mini habitation module, which is now just called the Habitation and Logistics Outpost, but that's all but being contracted to Northrop Grumman. They already released a request for proposals for lunar logistics services, and they've already closed the solicitation process for human-rated lunar landers and later in 2019. And at least two companies have publicly announced their bids for the human-rated lunar landers, in particular Boeing and Blue Origin. Blue Origin is interesting because it is actually a team of four companies to design together a lunar lander to get to the surface of the moon. In addition to that, NASA announced in October that it was releasing its plans for the new spacesuits that are going to get us to the moon, called the XEMU, or the Exploration Extravehicular Mobility Unit. I don't want to say it's based off of the current spacesuits on the space station, but it takes that heritage and updates it and actually makes it more mobile for basically all body sizes. The Artemis program in general, one of the exciting things about this is every major part is funded. For the fiscal year 2020 budget, every major part is funded. It's not to the level NASA would like necessarily. Mm. For example, the lunar lander, the human-rated lunar lander, they requested $1 billion for that for 2020. They're only getting $600 million. Now, the biggest hurdle, I think, in the next couple of years for Artemis is staying on schedule, regardless of the budget, because there's really no room for error to meet 2024. If something happens, like there's an explosion, it's done. Game over.
Well, that's scary.
Yeah. Now, that's not to say that the program would be canceled. That just means 2024 is not happening.
Okay. But that's a good distinction.
Yeah, that is a good distinction there. Now, I hope they make it by 2024. I don't think anybody wants them to fail, but I really don't think they're going to make 2024. That's my opinion.
I'd agree. Yeah, that seems like a really high bar.
But that's the point, though. It's basically letting a fire under the collective pants of NASA.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a really good example.
There's that concept where if you make a deadline longer, people find a way to fill the time for
that's exactly
it.
And right.
If you make a deadline sooner, you somehow find a way to get it done sooner. In theory, I know it's like a psychology.
You get more
almost.
Creative.
Yeah, you
and
do.
So, for example, the Lunar Gateway was initially we had these plans for it to be a few more modules with international partners, and we were able to do that at least in the concept phase because it didn't need to be fully ready until 2028. But now that we need it ready not by 2024 but by 2023 in advance, we can test it to make sure it's still working properly before the first crew mission goes up to the moon. That means you really have to scale that back. So what do you need the minimum? What is the minimum you need for that? And that is a power and propulsion element and a habitation module with some docking ports so that you could just aggregate your lunar lander at the gateway and have everything pre-positioned for that first human mission.
Only 4 years away.
Five years, technically.
I guess.
If you count throughout 2020, 60 months from this podcast.
Yeah.
60 months. And if you put it that way, that's time's ticking.
Yeah. Get going.
So that's just kind of a brief rundown of what happened in 2019, very bridged, obviously, and kind of a 2020 outlook, really into the 2020s outlook, if you will. Starting next week, for the second episode and the next few episodes, it's going to be a series about really how we got the Artemis program hardware that we have. For example, as I mentioned in the teaser trailer for this show, that the Orion spacecraft cannot get into low lunar orbit, which seems kind of odd for a spacecraft designed to help humans return to the moon. Now, after listening to this podcast, you might gather why that is, but we'll get into more detail next time.
Well, Derek, this is a great discussion to have.
I think so, too, and it's important that we kind of remember where we were in order to kind of better understand how we're going to get to places in the future.
Definitely. Well, we thank our listeners as well. Tune into the next episode.
Yep. See you next time. Ad Astra.